Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday and Sunday right here on KTEP. I want to remind you that the views expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KTEP. Good afternoon, I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us today is Dr. Howard Campbell. Dr. Campbell is not a stranger to KTP. He is a professor here on campus, and one of his areas of expertise is drug cartels, and he's written several books on the cartels themselves. So on this quick moment, we happen to get you, Howard, and I want to thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louis, and I want to clarify that I've given up on studying drug trafficking because I'm tired of it. I think the same way that most people from El Paso and Juarez are tired of thinking and talking about drug trafficking because of all the violence that occurred in Juarez and has occurred throughout Mexico.
As far as the area that you're moving in, is it something – because you're archaeology, correct?
I'm a cultural anthropologist, and now I'm focusing on other aspects of the border culture that are much more optimistic, one of which is people that deliberately move from the United States to Juarez because they like living in Juarez better than they like living in the United States. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, that Mexico is still a beautiful country. So is Juarez a beautiful city. It's on the comeback. And so maybe the capture of Chapo Guzman is a good omen for the future of Juarez, but we'll see.
And the reason that you came to mind is because of your past and the books that you've written, the literature, the research, the journal articles, and the many, many interviews that you've done, not just nationally but internationally, on drug trafficking and the cartels. And this had happened. It was a big day for news, actually, Saturday, because of what happened in Ukraine and then with capture of Chapo Guzman. Was this a big surprise to you, or is this something that people are saying, they've caught him before, he's going
to
escape?
It was a big surprise to me, as I think it was to most observers of drug trafficking in Mexico, because Chapo Guzman escaped from prison in 2001, and therefore he was on the lam running the Sinaloa drug cartel for 13 years. And so one of the questions people have always raised is, how is it possible that one of the most wanted criminals on the planet was able to travel around Mexico relatively freely and not get arrested? So the big question was, why was he busted? Why was he captured now? And a lot of us tend to think in political terms that when an important criminal figure like Chapo Guzman is arrested, it's because certain political arrangements and timing were such that it was a good thing for the government to do, as opposed to in the past when maybe they didn't have as much incentive to capture Chapo Guzman.
I know that you can't comment on this directly because you're not a political scientist, but according to some of the reports in the Associated Press, in the New York Times, and the Washington Post, they said that some people had speculated that Felipe Calderón's administration had protected him.
Right. I think that a lot of people in Mexico feel that most politicians are corrupt and that there are always strong connections between drug cartels and politicians, such that if a cartel leader like Chapo is captured, it's because he had a falling out with the government, and that leaders of cartels are allowed to exist when they have strong arrangements with the government, i.e. they pay bribes and there's a corrupt relationship that allows them to operate. Now, I don't have such a dark and cynical view of Mexico. I love the country. I realize it's a huge, complex place. And you have both corruption and you have democratic elections. Mexico is a modern economy. It's a country on the move that's, I think, in many ways getting better. But over the last 10 years, this problem of drug-related violence has been horrific, especially in Juarez. And so the capture of Chapo Guzman, in that sense, regardless of the circumstances, is certainly a good thing.
Now, what about what happens now? Some people have claimed, and also other journalists, that the capture of Chapo Guzman may be a thorn in the side, but it's not the dagger in the heart that they need because there's always somebody else ready to step in.
I think that's absolutely true. In that sense, I think the capture of Chapo Guzman is important symbolically in terms of the public image of the president of Mexico, Enrique Peña Nieto. It's an important political event, but it will not change the overall pattern of drug trafficking from Mexico into the United States, because U.S. demand has not changed. We continue to desire and consume vast amounts of marijuana, heroin, cocaine, as well as meth, and a lot of those drugs come from Mexico. So we create the demand, and Mexico produces the supply. So Chapo is gone, someone else will take his place, and the business will just keep chugging along. Now, one reason it does keep chugging along, of course, is because many times certain cartels have protection from political authorities as well as the military and various police agencies such as the federal police. I think everyone that studies Mexico or has lived there accepts this as a reality. It's something people want to change. A lot of people want to change this, but it's still part of the fabric, unfortunately, of the Mexican economy. But again, I want to also blame Americans, the United States, for creating this demand situation. And so we tend to blame Mexico for all of these problems and say Mexico's created this violence because of their criminality. But of course, we created the demand.
What about what happens now? Is there going to be a downfall?
See, I would guess there will be a certain amount of infighting within the Sinaloa cartel, although Mexican news reports already indicate that there's a replacement for him, a drug trafficker named El Mini Leak, that is El Mini Licenciado, the little lawyer, or the little narco junior. So it's a 40-year-old man, 40 years young, rather. A young entrepreneurial type who's going to replace Chapo Guzman, at least according to these reports. Therefore, the Sinaloa cartel will continue to send tons of drugs into the United States. And so really, I don't think we should call this a great victory. It's, again, of symbolic and political importance. I think it's interesting to compare the capture of Chapo to the capture, or actually the killing of Osama bin Laden. Of course, that was an important thing for the United States politically, and it did hurt the al-Qaeda leadership, but I don't think it really changed the overall conflict between radical, ultra-radical Islamic groups and the United States government. That conflict continues essentially unabated. I think we'll have the same phenomenon vis-a-vis Mexican drug cartels and Mexican law enforcement and U.S. Anti-drug enforcement.
I'm glad that you mentioned the United States because, again, in one of those articles, it mentioned that this involved also U.S. Marshals and DEA officials and not just Mexican military and other law enforcement officials.
Yes. I mean, Mexico has a very proud nationalistic tradition of wanting to be sovereign and independent from outside domination, such as from the United States. But historically, the U.S. has economically and to a certain extent politically pushed Mexico around. Now, from time to time, we have trade agreements, and the two countries are very much interlocked when it comes to economic issues and, of course, cultural issues. I mean, there are 50 million Latinos in the United States, and the majority of those are people of Mexican descent. There are millions of Americans that live in Mexico and tens of millions that travel there every year. So the two countries are absolutely in what I consider a kind of dysfunctional marriage, but we're married to Mexico. The United States and Mexico are married. So there's good and bad in both of that. The bad part, I suppose, is this drug trafficking situation and drug consuming situation. And one might say it's a good thing that American police agencies such as and the DEA and other law enforcement organizations are working in a somewhat cooperative way with Mexican police and law enforcement to crack down on people like Chapo Guzman. But of course, there are many people in Mexico that see this as a kind of invasion almost, a kind of U.S. encroachment on Mexican national sovereignty, and that the more the United States police and DEA agents get involved in this anti-drug trafficking effort, the more Mexico cedes or gives up some of its power to control its own country. So clearly this is a bittersweet kind of situation for Mexico. They'd rather be able to resolve this problem themselves without U.S. interference or involvement. But the United States has the most effective police technologies in the world and databases and satellites and all the rest and drones even that can be used to fight against drug cartels. Those of us that are pacifists, though, would like to see a kind of nonviolent pacifistic solution to the issue of drug trafficking and drug consumption. One method perhaps is legalization of marijuana, as occurred recently in Washington and in the state of Colorado. There are many people, including former President Vicente Fox in Mexico, that are calling for legalization of marijuana worldwide or certainly within the entire country of United States and Mexico. Maybe that's one way to fight this battle as opposed to the way we've done it in the past, involving throwing billions of dollars at weapons and attempts to interdict drugs, but essentially never winning the war on drugs. So in that sense, we have to be realistic. The capture of Chapo Guzman really does not change the overall drug trafficking business, nor does it change U.S. policy vis-a-vis the drug war.
You mentioned Osama bin Laden, and going back to what some people are comparing to, and I'm not sure if it's a fair comparison or not, the legalization of marijuana to prohibition, and the fact that all of a sudden they were making criminals out of ordinary citizens. Now, of course, marijuana is different because marijuana is an illegal drug. However, as you mentioned, during prohibition and then when Al Capone was sent to prison, organized crime continued to function just perfectly. So it's not like, as you mentioned, it's going to continue.
That's right. And even if we legalized marijuana in the United States and Mexico, there would still be a black market trade in essentially illegal marijuana outside of retail establishments, because this drug is so lucrative. And also, it's always a matter of price and supply and demand. And Mexico can produce vast amounts of very inexpensive marijuana and easily deliver it to U.S. cities. So even legalization of marijuana in the United States will not wipe out organized crime elements that supply marijuana. So the point is that even there's no panacea, there's no simple solution. Legalization has some benefits. It keeps people out of prison who have just possessed or sold small amounts of marijuana. It creates tax revenue for state governments. But we know that marijuana does impair short-term memory. It also makes people poorer drivers and leads to more driving accidents when people are high. So there's no simple solution. But the most important thing is, if we try to face these problems directly in a scientific, rational way and try to seek solutions within the United States, we need to lower our consumption of all drugs, create a happier society where people don't have to turn to drugs for solace. And we need to treat Mexico in a fair, more balanced way. Mexico has economic problems. Drug trafficking fills the void of those economic needs. We need to help and work with Mexico to create a stronger economy such that young men won't go into the drug trade as they have in the past. So again, all these problems are extremely complex. They capture Chapo Guzman in Mexico. But basically, at a larger international level, the political and economic and social issues connected to drugs, trafficking, consumption, and so on don't really change.
You mentioned about peaceful and pacifists and the violence that's going on. And it's no secret that the number, latest number, and correct me if I'm wrong, 90% of the weapons taken into Mexico are from the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that Mexican drug cartels arm themselves with weapons purchased often legally, or at least the transaction occurs within a store in the United States, and then somehow these guns get into Mexican hands, the hands of criminals in Mexico. And we can say as much as we want and deny this and say, well, it's not our fault. But there's no question that when you have this incredible market for arms in the United States and you have criminals in Mexico that want these arms, that, again, supply and demand will meet each other. So, again, the United States and Mexico are locked together. We're intertwined. We need to work together to seek positive, pacifistic solutions to joint problems. And drugs are certainly a joint problem in this case.
This was obviously a secret operation, kind of like the Osama bin Laden, and people were caught by surprise, as you and I were. So what does this do as far as the not just the relationship between the U.S. and Mexico, but also for the administration of President Nieto?
Well, the immediate impact is it'll help the poll numbers for President Peña Nieto. And I think it's quite clear that they captured Chapo Guzman right after President Obama met with President Peña Nieto. I don't think that's an accident. I think no es por casualidad. It's not by chance. Every time the United States presses Mexico on the drug issue, they somehow discover where Rafael Caro Quintero is or Amado Carrillo Fuentes or whoever are the top leaders, and oftentimes there are these very sensational arrests of drug capos, and there's a lot of celebration and champagne corks are, you know, uncapped and so on, and then nothing really changes. And I don't like to be cynical about these issues. I think we need to hope for a better future when it comes to U.S.-Mexico relations and drug issues. But in this case, realistically, nothing is going to change.
You were mentioning at the beginning of the program as far as your change in your research and some of the academia, the road that that's taken you, and the fact that a lot of people have left Mexico since the violence started, and very few people go into Mexico now, especially Americans, because they're afraid. So what is going to change? How does President Nieto convince the people that it's okay to come on over? It's okay, it's safe, and look what we have to offer. Because as you mentioned, it's a beautiful country. People used to come visit us, and first place we'd take them was to Juarez.
That's right. Peña Nieto, initially when he first took office, tried to change Mexico's image by essentially trying to force newspapers and television stations not to broadcast information about the drug trade and about violence and homicides in Mexico. But of course, that's no solution to the problem. That's a kind of political band-aid, and it's actually a form of censorship. That policy did not work. People are well aware that Mexico continues to have a lot of drug-related homicides. Essentially, since Peña Nieto took office, the homicide rate has stayed constant with the rates of homicide under President Calderón, who was much condemned for attacking the cartels and spurring this sort of drug war in Mexico. Peña Nieto hasn't really done much differently other than to try to keep it off the front page, even though the violence continues. Michoacán is totally out of control right now. So in that sense, Peña Nieto has not changed the strategy. So capturing Chapo Guzmán will not change this problem of violence in Mexico. And one terrible fear we have is that the violence in Juarez may spike again because the Chapo Guzmán-Sinaloa cartel may be weakened, and the Juarez cartel, perhaps in alliance with the Zetas, will try to regain power there. So what does President Peña Nieto do to try to reassure Mexicans, of course, Mexican citizens, but also Americans, that the country is safe? The best thing he can do is pull back the soldiers and pull back the police a bit and not try to attack cartels frontally, but try to take the violence out of the drug equation, try to negotiate with the United States some kind of arrangement such that there's legalization in both countries, that we slow down the flow of arms, but also that we treat drug issues more in social terms and not in political and military terms. Now, I don't think Peña Nieto, is going to do that. I think he's going to stay the course, which is to say they have these constant skirmishes with cartels in various parts of the country, but never really fully win the battle. They capture famous drug lords like Chapo and various leaders of the Zetas, but the organizations continue. The billion-dollar trade continues. What's needed, though, is smarter policies. I think in some cases, yes, you have no choice but to send in the military or the police, perhaps in the case of Michoacán, and perhaps to attack the Zetas. But in general, that approach did not work under Calderón, and it's not working under Peña Nieto. So I think they need to retool the strategy. The United States also needs to back off on pressuring the Mexican government to attack the cartels frontally.
That was going to be my next question. President Obama's term, I mean, he's basically what you would call a lame duck president. Yet he was elected on a lot of promises that he made about, you know, immigration reform and stopping violence, economy, jobs. So what does he do as far and what do DEA agents and other law enforcement officials do? Do they just step back, because there has been talk about the fact that they want him extradited into the United States?
Right. My concern here is that we're missing the root of the problem. The root of the problem of drugs, I suppose, ultimately is economic. That is, if there was very high employment in Mexico and much less social inequality, then young people would not look to the drug trade to find a job. So if we could support Mexico in boosting their economy, but also redistributing the wealth such that there would be much less poverty in places like Juarez and Tijuana and Culiacan and so on, that's the most effective thing we could ever do to lessen the drug trade and drug-related violence. Now, of course, we have the DEA and we have other law enforcement agencies in the United States that are not going to stop their efforts. And to some extent, I agree with the need to prevent heroin and cocaine and meth from reaching young people in American cities. Drug abuse is a terrible thing. But as we've seen along the U.S.-Mexico border, militarization really is not the solution. Those of us that have lived here a long time or people that grew up here know that there was a time when Juarez and El Paso were almost one city. And I think that was an ideal state of affairs. We need to try to return to that. We need to go to Juarez. We need to go to Mexico. We need to trade with Mexico. And I have to admit, I don't have a solution to this problem. It's not a simple problem. It's a very complicated one. But it should be one that we try to attack in a non-military way, in a way that supports the growth of jobs. I think President Obama could do that. The growth of more free trade between the U.S. and Mexico, as Beto O'Rourke has called for over and over. And immigration reform, as you mentioned, Louis. I think if Obama could be more proactive on that, that would be good for Mexico, because Mexico needs to get the revenue that many immigrants that come here to work send back to families in Mexico. It makes the lives of immigrants safer. America needs these people to work in jobs. So I think there are win-win situations when it comes to economic decisions and immigration issues that could lessen a bit of the problem vis-a-vis drugs.
As you mentioned, immigration reform, there are a lot of people, as you mentioned, who want to come into the United States, and they're honest people. They want to work hard. They want to pursue that American dream. And we're talking about drugs. Alfredo Corchado's book, Midnight in Mexico, has been very successful. The screen rights have been sold. But he talks about his father's dream, and his father came over here as abracero. But one of the things that people argue about is that Mexican immigrants do not have the money that some of the European immigrants have. And so when you're talking about $600 or even more per person to file an application, I mean, that's ridiculous for someone who makes minimum wage.
Right. Immigration reform in the United States is long overdue, and unfortunately, Obama has not been able to pull this off. But even the Republicans are talking about this now. They realize in order to get elected in this country in the future, you better have a healthy chunk of the Latino vote. I mean, Latinos are 50 million people now. And in the near future, maybe in my children or grandchildren's lifetime, Latinos may be half the population of the United States. So in some sense, the United States is becoming, you know, part Mexican, if not half Mexican, or however you want to phrase it. And in that sense, Mexican people and Latinos are a very important political constituency. They're part of American culture and in any way imaginable, the American economy. We need to quit thinking of Mexicans as people that come across the border to steal our jobs, quote unquote, or that all Mexicans are drug traffickers. Of course, only less than 1% of immigrants from Mexico have any involvement in drug trafficking. So clearly, immigration reform would help the United States and it would help Mexico.
It's interesting, as you mentioned, the word Mexican, because this is something that a friend and I were discussing over the weekend, the fact that when you say Mexican, it sounds almost like derogatory, just like when you used to say a Jew. That sounded derogatory.
Right. But I think that people of El Paso realize that the Mexican culture was here before the Anglo culture, and that Mexican culture in much of the Southwest is the majority culture in population terms alone. I know many people in the United States that think Mexico is a great country. Over the weekend, I interviewed an African-American man, and the first thing he said was, Juarez is my home. And he lived in Mexico for 30 or 40 years in different parts of Chihuahua, including Juarez. And he told me that when he became a Mexican, his world opened up. That was an African-American man saying that he became a Mexican in cultural terms because he liked Mexico. So I guess we need to change the discourse, the way we talk about Mexico and Mexican people. And of course, UTEP and El Paso are at the forefront of those kinds of discussions.
It's interesting, as you mentioned, border cities earlier in the interview, the fact that the majority of the border cities seem to be almost like third world countries. And it's ironic when you're driving down the freeway and you look to your left and you see this beautiful university, and you look to your right and you see these people who are just barely making it.
Yeah, there are tremendous ironies and contradictions on the border. And it's no question, there's no question that the horrible violence that occurred in Juarez led to prosperity in El Paso, that tens of thousands of people left Juarez, came to El Paso, brought with them money. They created businesses here. El Paso started booming economically because of refugees from Juarez. We need to be aware of these injustices and inequalities. But UTEP plays a real key role, though, and I think that we can help try to understand these problems. That I always tell my students, the infrastructure at UTEP is at UTEP is as good as that at any other university I've ever been to, including UT Austin, UCLA, or Harvard. UTEP is a beautiful university with great buildings, great facilities, a strong student body, and faculty really devoted to learning and especially understanding our region, the U.S.-Mexico border, including, unfortunately, drug trafficking.
A lot of people, as you mentioned, whether it's a lack of education or they just have it made up in their mind, you know, this picture. But as I was talking to a colleague of mine this weekend as well, they were saying that they used to work at Harvard as recruiters, and that she said, why don't you send me to Texas so I can visit my family and I can recruit at UTEP? And they said, oh, we don't recruit at vocational schools.
Yeah, I think that, as you said before, unfortunately, there are a lot of stereotypes and derogatory ideas associated with Mexicans in the United States or with Ciudad Juarez or even with El Paso and UTEP. But those of us that are here know what we have and what our strengths are. And I think in the future, UTEP and El Paso are going to play a very big role in the future, in a positive future in the United States.
Well, Howard, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. And if people are interested in perhaps looking at some of your past work, I'm sure that some of that is still available on your website or on Amazon.
Sure. I think my book's available in the UTEP bookstore and on my faculty website at the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at UTEP. There's a list of my publications. I would also invite anyone who wants to talk about anthropology or Mexico or UTEP to give me a call.
And again, as you mentioned, we will probably visit again in the future to talk about this partnership between Mexico and the United States and how we can get more people to go to Mexico and people to come back into the United States as well so that the economy can grow together. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much. Será o no será, solo él lo sabrá, si está el cautiverio, el Chapo Guzmán, será el más buscado, o el más olvidado, eso no se sabe y nunca lo sabrá. La historia conocen también muchos logros, números y claves, los alias y apodos que tiene dinero, que ayuda a su gente, la sierra rezará para que regrese. Es una teoría de conspiración, sí, claro, no está. Será la razón que nadie confíes, de nada que creas, la prensa censura mientras les convenga.
The producer would like to thank the efforts of the folks at the Universidad Autónoma de Chihuahua and Consejo Regional Noreste for the use of the homegrown corrido all about the capture of Chapo Guzman. This show, along with past episodes of Perspectives, are available on our website, ktep.org, and may be downloaded as a podcast only for personal use. Any rebroadcasts of Perspectives or portions thereof are not allowed by law, except with the express written consent of the producers and host of Perspectives. All rights reserved by KTEP, the University of Texas at El Paso, and the UT Board of Regents.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.